Aloha, everyone. We are going to commence our meeting. Our chair is absent today, and I, Bill Souza, will be the vice chair today, or the assistant chair. First of all, on our agenda is the approval of Friday sitting agenda. Is there a motion?
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor, please?
Aye.
Thank you. Next on our agenda, the minutes approval amendments of March 28th, limited meeting, and also the approval amendments of March 29th, meeting minutes.
Move to approve the minutes for the limited meeting on March 28th.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Next, the approval amendments to the March 29th meeting minutes.
I have a few comments. We have a name inconsistency on the list of public homeowners and nominators. We have a Rachel Donner. But in the presentation for the Honolulu Kamehameha Nakahae Hawaii Van Holt residence, it's listed as Rachel Donnell. I have a feeling it's the same person, but with the recording, we need to check which is the correct name, Donner or Donnell. And then, just as a technical point, on all of the votes, it says all in favor, but a couple of the votes were not all in favor. So, for example, the Dearborn Chemical, it was a 7-1-1 vote. So rather than putting all in favor, if they just put in favor and then the list of who voted for, it would be technically more correct. And if you do that for all of them, it's consistent. So if you could just change the all in favor to just in favor, It would simplify things. And then Chandra can use the same template every time.
I have another one on November 29. Just as I had abstained from the October 5th one, I wasn't at the meeting on November 29 because I hadn't joined the board yet. So that's why I abstained from the first one. So I abstained from the second too. Otherwise, I'm not there at all.
We have a question from the audience. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. There's a written version of the minutes for the last meeting that you folks have.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't on the website. I looked last night to find out, and all there was an audio tape. In fact, several of the other dates said draft minutes rather than replacing the final minutes. I could like to request whoever is in charge that before the board gets a chance to vote on it, the public can get a copy of the final written minutes. It would make our being able to participate a lot more effective.
And if I could add on to that, I tried to listen last night to the oral minutes, half an hour of you folks chatting. I mean, it wasn't a meeting, and there's no IT coordination where you can go backwards or skip forward. You're just stuck. And so that doesn't reflect good professionalism. I just think the IT person or somebody has to step in there and make it better.
Thank you, Helen.
Well, two things. First, I cannot explain why the written minutes were not posted, because they were done at the same time the audio tapes were done, and the minutes, as you will see, have the timestamp where the discussion for a particular item occurs. So they should actually be posted this morning. I left them with our IT guy to post. But that is compliant with law, is to post the audio tapes and the minutes. And it turns out posting audio tapes on our website turns out to be a much more elaborate job than we thought it would be. So we're still working on those details out there.
Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Well, it's just, again, I've never been in an organization that didn't have a printed minutes up in time for the public to go ahead and respond to them. And because what it is the board and the public is supposed to be an iterative process. And so I'm just saying that I really think that the board and the SHPE itself should go ahead and make sure that that is, well, just as any other requirement, whether the Lieutenant Governor's office, a week in advance, or anything else, should have some kind of a standard that they're up there. And the reason, again, I brought up the fact that it says draft minutes on some of the other ones is that this isn't a one-time incident. So, again, I'm just saying that for good practice with the public, we don't want to have the Office of Information Practices get involved either. I would just strongly recommend that be done, at least maybe a week in advance.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, two observations. One is that we make every effort to comply with the requirements of Sunshine Act. Just to Ross's point, OIP is involved in our business all the time. In fact, about 5 o'clock last night, I got a call from OIP. So that's just seems to be going in the territory. We don't always meet the deadlines. We're aware of that. And, I had a discussion with the chair last night, meeting the deadlines for minutes is a problem for every agency in the state government. It's just that, I think everybody's aware that Chandra is actually my secretary rather than the board secretary. So the work she does for the board is in addition to everything else that she has to do. And she's not just my secretary, she has additional duties for the division as a whole. And so even with the Bureau of Land and Natural Resources, which has a full-time staff person devoted to that activity, she can't get the minutes posted in a timely fashion. And if you go to a board meeting, Boyle Land Natural Resources meeting, and consistently they're deferring action on prior meetings minutes because their minutes are not available. So I hear Ross's complaint, and we do the best we can.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, I don't know if everybody heard Ross's question. He wants to know what can be done to make it better. All we can do is try. We have tried, we have asked for additional appropriations during the budget process for additional staff to help support the board activities, and that money is not forthcoming. And so what we have to do is do what we can with the people we have. All I can say is we do the best we can, and we'll continue to do what we can to do that. And I don't know what else I can say. When I get my report, I'll have a little bit of a discussion about the budget, and we can, it may be appropriate to talk about those kinds of things at that point rather than right now. But short of additional staff and additional resources, all we can do is try to be better. But I'm not going to say we're never going to miss a deadline. I just can't say that because I know the reality of our staff.
Thank you, Ellen. We are going to move on. And if you have any further discussions, bring it up with him at the break or what have you. We have the approval and amendments to the March 29th. We had several amendments and additions and corrections. Is there a motion to that with the corrected version?
Move to approve the amended version of the minutes for March 29th.
Seconded.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. nominations for J.R. Louise Henderson residence.
The owner of the Koyanagi House is here. Could I ask?
Go ahead.
I missed you.
That's right. Go right ahead. Is it okay with the board?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll do that first.
Yep.
Okay. Everybody here saw the house yesterday. It was built in 1950 by Franklin Gladys Koyanagi. I've mentioned I don't know who the designer is because the name is illegible on the permit. It's a single-story house with a hip pavement roof, has concrete walls, small entryway. This is a nice little detail I thought I pointed out to some people. Providing ventilation because it's on a post and pier foundation inside. But, then on the interior, very much intact, has picture window, which was just coming in after the war, sliding windows for ventilation still, jalousie hadn't really taken off popular-wise. And so has all its original windows except for three in the back of the house, which are not seen from the street. Has the original K-neck ceiling, the original lights are in the house as well. The family room originally was an open lanai. There was pocket doors here, which were removed around 1955, and aluminum was put out here to enclose the space, which again is something that was happening in Hawaii at that time. The Ho house, which is right down the street, had the same thing. Essentially, they enclosed the lanai and made it part of the house. In this case, the door that went out to the lanai from the hallway is still, well, the door is gone, but the doorway is still there. Next. And they kept a glass block that framed that door as well, which again is a typical of the early 50s. By the end of the 50s, glass block would pretty much go out until much later time. It has its original doorknobs and doors throughout the house. And something I forgot to point out to you yesterday, which I thought I'd do now, the locking mechanism for the sliding windows, if you can read it, it says made in occupied Japan. Which is a nice little thing. I've seen it in two or three other houses, but you know right away that the house is built between 50 and 53, or maybe a year or two later if the hardware store had some left surplus parts.
Not so, made in USA, huh?
Hmm?
Not made in USA, which is another thing, I guess.
Oh,
one town was renamed USA.
Yes. No. I don't know why it's this part is always marked at me. It's there, so I know about my house. But the house is very much intact, and it's being nominated as a good example of modern architecture of the period on a modest scale. And materials are all typical of the period. The design's typical of the period.
Thank you, Don. Members of the board, questions? Don?
I thought I remember in your nomination form that you had a picture of the original floor plan. Is that correct?
Okay, yes, I did.
And it didn't indicate on there who it didn't indicate on there who designed it.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Is there more to that? Was it? Did you have just the floor plan, or is there elevation?
I don't remember.
No, it was just one sheet of a blueprint, and that was it. And it was largely illegible.
I said those are usually such valuable information to include. I was just going to suggest that you had more sheets to include as well.
Did you check the newspapers to see if there was a notice or anything?
No, I did not. I can go back and do that.
No, I just was curious.
I'm
all big on this. This
news.com
is just wonderful, right? So you might be able to find it quite quickly.
Yeah. I can run that, and if I find it, I will add it to the nomination. Oh, yes. While I'm talking, one mistake in the nomination. Save as old nominations, and then saved as the Ho residence. I noticed that the header, it'll say Ho residence, but I've changed that to be Koyanagi.
What phase are we in? Questions or comments?
And it's being nominated at what level again?
Local level.
Oh, just the local.
For architecture?
Yes, for architecture, criteria C.
Okay, are there any questions, anybody? For the board? Is there a motion?
Before we can just see.
I move we nominate the property at 3870 Nicola Street to the state, the Hawaii Historic Places. What is it? Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criterion C at the local level.
Thank you, Bill. Is there a second?
A second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
I just thought it was a nice little example of that period, and so well kept, you know, that, I mean, it was really, when you look around at some of the other stuff coming up, it's a little gem in a way.
I thought so too, and I love that the garden was coherent with and was part of the story.
I like the way the rocks were laid in the back, as the way the texture and the whole ornament. You really did a really good there. I too thought it reminded me, harkened me back of my time to my grandfather's place, and that's what it looked like inside. Okay.
I had one quick question.
Yes.
Was there any history of the family or how they got the property?
But
how they decided that that was a place for you, your family to live?
Oh, they had all the same. That whole area was the backyard of the living house, the backyard of the kitchen. So they raised horses there. And then Walter subdivided that area, gave parcels to each of his sons. And so the house in back of us was one of the sons' houses. Okay, and then they sold it to Robert Cole, who has the property. Historic property 2 doors down. And my dad was looking for a place. We were living in Vermont at that time. And I found it and always wanted to sell what happened to this property to my dad. And at that time, my brother and I were still little. And I said, Dad, that's too far. That's in the country. You know, we wanted to be by our friends and family and me. But Dad said, no, this is a perfect place. It's near the beach. It's by the park. You're going to love it. And we never regretted. You know, Dad had the foresight to see that this was going to be a wonderful place for his family. And it was. So Dad, you know, cleared the land, had to go. It was all Kiawe at that time. Cleared it, built the house, and they lived in it until 2000 when they went to assisted living. Dad was a real handy person, so he was able to maintain the integrity of the house throughout that time. My husband and I took it over in 2000. And we've tried the best we can to also maintain the integrity. We've done some renovations, but we really tried to keep like the old sash windows in the kitchen, which the contractor wanted us to tear out and put this aluminum stuff in there. You know, so on and so forth. But you know, we put a halt to all that. And you know, Mom and Dad were from very humble beginnings. They weren't rich by any means. And this is their legacy, basically. And if you were to deem it as historical property, they would be so honored and proud. And to have it documented as part of the Aina, a historic Aina, part of the Aina. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the personal description, because that does add a lot more to the texture of what we're presenting today.
I was going to suggest that because you mentioned the concrete water trough in your text, that maybe you could add a picture of that. Just so I think going forward, people would know then what that is.
Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, I thought that was a great touch. You know, I mean, it just expands the view of the history of the property with this funny little wall that was the horses drinking So I remember going by Kapi'olani in the 50s as a kid, and there was polo ponies out there, and all the Dillinghams were out there, I guess. I also enjoyed hearing why your dad chose concrete block.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if the rest of you heard that, but my dad grew up in Waigeo on a truck farm in Lataki Camp, where there was a stream running through it. And every time it rained heavily on Mount Kaala, it would flood, overflow. And one time when he was about 10 years old, it overflowed so badly that it split their house in two. The water split their house in two. So that one of the bedrooms was like 50 feet down river from the main house. And so Dad promised himself that when he built a house, water was not going to move it. And so we have this fortress.
I don't know if it's important to make worthy of change, but a lot of the things we've been talking about are really more historical than architectural. I don't know if other people think that too. I mean, the house sort of documents the shift to opening up of these kind of suburbs to Japanese who had previously not been encouraged to live there. The trough is part of its history, not its architecture. I think you probably have enough in there to support criterion A as well.
If you think there's enough in there, okay, but I'd be reticent to add more.
Right, but you do mention the Japanese moving into the neighborhood. I just think in the future, if someone's like looking for things to tell a story and it's only noted as architecture, they may not go to look at this during their research, but that's just a thought. I don't want to make you do more work.
Thank you.
Are you amending the motion, though?
Yes.
So I will amend that motion to include criteria A and C.
Okay. Bill has just introduced.
Yeah, second.
Just second. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, everyone.
Is that for the amendment or is that for the nomination?
That's the amendment.
The amendment first, yes.
Okay.
Now you have to do the main motion.
I'll do it again.
Okay, now for the main motion. We just did the amendment.
Okay, so I can make it again.
Sure.
So I move that the 3870 Nicola Street be added to the Hawaii Register of Historic Places. Meeting criteria A and C.
At the local level.
At the local level.
Second.
Thank you. Thanks, Laura.
Any discussion? All those in favor? Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The second house is the Charles and Louise Henderson residence. This came before the board last year. As is in the case of today, there was only six people voting, and it failed by a vote of 5-1. So I decided to wait till there was more board members. But of course, even though there's more board members, there's still only six. But we will proceed. So the house on site visit, and I just drove through the house a week or so ago.
Sunday, yeah.
So the house, I call it a Hawaiian regional style house because it has double pitch hip roof. And Bill mentioned very much Monterey style with the overhanging balcony, can't leave it out. And
the shutters too.
And the shutters, yes. And so. It's a very well-designed house. There have been some alterations to the house. 1969, Barbara Cox Anthony purchased the house, and in the 70s and 80s, she made a number of changes to the house on the interior, but essentially the exterior stayed intact. So it's very much, not only for the architecture we're nominating, but also the landscape design. The house was designed by Harry Sims Bent, I didn't think about it until just the other day. Mrs. Dillingham was in charge of the Parks and Recreation Board at that time. And she hired Bent to do Ala Moana Park and the Art Deco parks around town, Guanacoa, Mother Waldron, Haleiwa. And Mrs. Henderson is Louise Dillingham's niece. So I suspect this is how Bent gets the commission for this house. It's designed and built in 1935. Next. You can see elements in the landscape that reflect other design proclivities of Bent, like this little scalloped entryway, which is could fit very easily into Ala Moana Park as well. In the back, you have the twisting paths and the steps again going up, very much Art Deco design applied to landscape design. And here's the back patio. And again, a focal point on a rounded niche in the back with the statue's new. And also, I want to have this photo to remind you, I think the house very definitely bent was very much into regional design that was appropriate. So the indoor-outdoor relationships are very important to this house. As you can see here, there's three large doors that open off Olanai onto the patio. And the other way, the library again, also opens up onto an arbor with a fireplace at the end. And there's a niche over here as well. And the upstairs, the second floor lanai, overlooks the patio back. It has all pocket doors that go out to close it in case of inclement weather. And also on the second floor, all the bedrooms have pocket doors with windows, and behind it they have hinged screen doors, which are both on both sides to give great cross ventilation to the whole house and the rooms. And here you can see the front cantilevered balcony. I like very much the little detail where you just turn the 2x2s, the quarter turn, and makes a difference. You can see some of the little deco detailing, even in the handling of the posts. And then again, the outdoor-indoor relationship. You have this lanai outside with metal columns, which Bent also used in another house up in New Guano, I found. And again, another niche with the paving is new here, but I don't think it detracts terribly from the whole sensibility. And then that lanai has a sitting room inside. The lanai is to the right here, if you remember. The wood ceiling is all intact, which again is following a deco pattern. He also has some scalloping up here, which is very Art Deco. And again, in the living room, you have another wood ceiling. This one actually had been plastered over by Barbara Cox Anthony, and the present owner took all that off and restored it. The dining room also had one, but that was in terrible condition. He couldn't save it.
And that's the fireplace that was added?
Huh?
The fireplace, that's the one that was added?
Yes, this fireplace was added by Barbara Cox Anthony also. But again, I don't think it really detracts from the overall of the room. It's there, but I don't think it's so critical that, oh, this house is not.
Was there another focal point there before? Because you have, or is the fireplace include those pilasters on either side that were
no,
there.
This, yeah, the fireplace included these pilasters too. Other deco elements, there's pocket sliding doors, which is essentially a screened area. This goes into the sitting room. Again, going into the library, you have a scalloped frame door. So there's a lot of deco elements that still remain in the house. And this one too, sorry, the picture's terrible. But again, you can see up on top the zigzag pattern above the door frame. And then you also have your stairway going up. and he articulates the treads and risers. Have a iron and wood balustrade. So the house has, I think, a lot of detail still remains of great feeling, and I think also the strong indoor-outdoor relationships. The grounds themselves are quite immaculate, and so I think all of that can have significance. Do you have any questions?
Why don't we, is there a motion to put this on? Is there a motion? Before.
Is this for the state and the national?
For the state.
Just state.
Just state.
One aspect we haven't talked about is just the garage, right? That was added on.
Oh, yes, the garage was added on. There was a other garage there before Barbara Cox Anthony took down and built a new garage, but it's in the corner. I don't think it's intrudes on the house at all. Set back as well.
I guess my only concerns would be the arches on the hallway. I guess we're added later, probably, in the fireplace and the flooring. Those seem to be the major issues. The rest of the stuff seems to be more decorative. The arches that are in the, you said were added by Barbara Cox?
No.
In the hallway, in the entrance hall?
Oh, yes, in the entrance hall, yes. I'm sorry to make sure that.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, that was solid wall, which was opened up.
But I got to say, other than the taste of the present owner, which is something we can't do anything with, but seems to preserve a remarkable amount of interesting detail, and particularly the things that do affect the outside, like the doors, the windows. I was amazed, and when I got up close to the shutters, I was surprised that they were original shutters, not something from Sears, as they look like maybe from the street, because it is so well maintained. I'm only letting someone else make the motion, but I can make the motion to get the discussion going.
No, would you please?
Yeah. So I move that the property at 93944 Noella Drive be listed in the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under Criterion C at the
local
level of significance.
Seconded.
Matt.
Okay, discussion.
I thought it was so cool. We've suddenly had a couple Monterey style buildings. We just had Hartwood at the same time period, not that long ago, about 10 years ago, not that long for me. We did that one by Osipoff over there on Oahu Avenue. It seems to have had a sudden burst of interest in 1938. Everybody said, let's do Monterey style. I do think we should note that more in the nomination if it's not there. Is the roof double pitched? You mentioned that it was, and I didn't notice, and when I looked at the slide, it didn't look it to me.
Well, maybe.
I mean, it's certainly a regional style.
Yeah. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not the wing, was it? Well, there it's. Let's see the front view.
Looks pretty straight to me.
Yep, you're right. Okay, I'm sorry. It's not.
So I would say that Monterey style must be one of our regional styles.
Yeah.
It kind of follows the kind of Bertram Goodhue arguments of Spain and the New World is what we need to look to in Hawaii for the appropriate architecture.
And it was very interesting, in the Osipoff house, I mentioned it in quite a bit of detail, that it's one of the things Osipoff capitalized on when he first came out here in the 30s, bringing this new style to Hawaii, and it's very appropriate. And obviously, the Hartwood had done one before, but Osipoff very much popularized it in the 30s.
I just think the garden is so important. With that continuity, and it's just, to my mind, a really neat story. when you see Alum 1 and then see here, it's sort of like he took the same pieces from both.
Well, it definitely is a very beautiful place. I can afford it, but I like it. I like the Koshpaj collection of architecture. Of course, I'm not an architect. I'm just a lover of great things, and I think it's one of those things that is worthy of being listed.
Is there a complication, the fact that we had this on the register or before our board recently, and it was determined not to be eligible, and now a few months later we're being asked the same question again? I mean, I'm not sure how that matters. Is there a double jeopardy clause or something?
Two things. Last vote was 5-1, and it takes 6 votes yes to make it on. So it's not a, I mean, so there was a very solid majority in favor last time. But as far as your question about, there's nothing in the rules that prohibits somebody from bringing it back over and over and over again. And if the board wants to consider something like that, or even demanding a time gap, that would require an amendment to the rules.
Fine.
So it didn't exactly fail the nomination.
No, just
didn't,
you know, the state rules require essentially a majority.
So we don't have a majority today, is that
right? No.
Depends on how many of us vote.
It will take a unanimous vote, yes, this to pass.
Well, shall we call for the question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Can I throw, I'm sorry, we should have thrown this in before. It's not an amendment, but can you clean up some of that description in the architectural description? The double pitch roof, the Monterey style.
Yeah, I'll look through this, you may have it right. I may have it wrong.
All right.
But I'll double check.
Thank you, Don. Okay, Mr. State Historic Preservation Division staff.
So I have handouts.
Ooh.
Not audio tapes, handouts.
And I'm not sure, this may be overkill. But I did want to, since we've had several discussions over the months about the budget, I thought I'd give you our actual budget that came, what the legislature passed this year. And what the governor signed. So this has been signed by the governor. It's been, the appropriation has been approved.
Can you make it so that everybody over here can see?
Trying to make sure that I can be heard on the tape. So just before I talk about sort of the budget per se, I'd like to talk about the process generally, and then the process as it evolved this year. So to start with, historically, Hawaii has done historical budget. In other words, you start with last year's budget and work off of that. Sometimes you're giving direction, well, the revenue is going to be down X percent, so you have to reduce your budget by a certain amount. Sometimes you're told the budget is, the revenue is up, it's making increases, so you can ask for a little bit more. That's the way it's always gone, and the process starts at the division level. We draft the budget. It goes to the chair's office, and when I first got here, the chair and first deputy and fiscal officer would sit down with the division administrator, and we'd go over the budget. We would argue for what we wanted, and they would make, based on that discussion, they would tell us to amend it or not, depending on what their decision was. That after it leaves the department, it goes to the budget and finance office, which is in the governor's office. They then apply the governor's priorities to the budget. The budget then goes to the governor for approval. The budget is then submitted to the legislature. And so two changes that, you know, one change that occurred when Suzanne Case was appointed, and that is the division administrators prepare the initial budget, and after that, we have no involvement. She and the first deputy and the fiscal officer make all the decisions internally within the department. They don't discuss it with us. It goes to the governor's office. We don't actually know what is in our budget until it comes back from the governor. So that's the process with internally within the department. This year, the legislature decided they weren't going to do the way it has always been done in the past. What Sylvia Luke declared was that we were going to do zero-based budget. Now, in reality, we didn't do a zero-based budget. And in reality, we did us, you know, the legislature started with last year's budget. And where in years gone by, the decision-making has all occurred at the Finance Committee in the House and the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate. They said, no, this year we're going to go to the oversight committees first. The oversight committees will go over the department's budgets, and then that will be what goes to the actions they take on those budgets goes to Finn and Ray. So this led to great scrambling. This is something that the legislature was not prepared for, and you know, there were numerous opportunities for things to slip through the cracks in the event that didn't happen, although it made for a really scary time, both for us and for the people in the legislature, because with the exception of the staff at Finn and Land, nobody knew what was going on. So on the House side, our oversight committee is the Ways and Means and Hawaiian Affairs. I'm sorry, Ways and Means, Water and Land and Hawaiian Affairs. And on the Senate side, we're Labor, Culture, and the Arts. On the Senate side, we are the only division that is in DLNR, which is not under Water and Land. So the staff on both sides, you know, for the oversight committee, was scrambling around trying to figure out what was going on. And one of the results was that at one point in the Senate, there were seven bills that affected Shippey's budget. In the final event, thank God, Sylvia Luke and Donovan Dela Cruz and their staff pulled it all together. And this bill, HB2, is what it was. This is the actual appropriation. This is what the governor signed. So if you turn to page 35, I'm going to give you the whole budget. It's 715 pages long. Just gave you the budget pages that have shipped on it. When you look up to item 4 on that list, it's LNR 802, that's historic preservation. If, you know, the highlight didn't show up very well. So it's this page here, but
I don't think I got that page.
My name is there.
Yeah, you should have one.
Oh. For 35.
So there are two columns. We do, every year, in theory, the first year of the biennium, they adopt a budget for both years. In practice, the first year, the 1920 is the only one that really is real, because next year we'll go through the process again, and like every other division, we'll ask for more money and see how it goes. So, we do. This is the only place I've ever worked where we don't do, you know, once it leaves our initial, you know, when Randolph and I sit down and do the budget in our office, we do a line item budget. And then it gets, you know, what we have here on page 35, that is our operating budget. So that is personnel and non-personnel operating expenses. That's all there. And so if you look there, you can see with the funding level, the $2.5 million that's identified as A, that's general funds. The $495,000, which is B, that's our special fund. And then the N funds, that's our federal grant, historic preservation fund grant.
Okay.
And you can also see above that first line there, the $2.5 million, 34, that's the number of positions that pays for. And then the six above the federal is that we have six positions that are federal.
May I ask one question?
Yeah.
How many positions that are not filled?
How many are vacant?
Yeah.
Okay, of our 40 positions, we have 8 vacancies. And with 8 vacancies, we have one position where we have made a selection, and we're just waiting for all the paperwork to clear so we can set a start date. We have one position that we're about to interview. We have another position we've interviewed. We have somebody we're thinking we will make an offer to. And then we have several positions that we have just started advertising for. And you know, if you want to go through the painful, I would be happy if everybody wants to hear the horror story of what it's like to recruit in this state.
How long does it take?
You know, I will tell you that if I can go from establishing a position to making an offer in 6 months, I consider it a miracle. You know, I think it's a miracle. We have filled 2 of the 9 new positions that were created in the last year's budget. And, you know, we have just started to advertise some of them because it takes so long to create the position and get permission to advertise.
Do you get to keep the money in the meantime or no?
We do not. We do not lose the money. The vacancy savings stays in our budget and we can use it for other purposes, which is a good thing because 92% of our budget is personnel. And you know, ideally it should be more like 80%. So, you know, we are going to be facing some serious problems, I think, in the near future when we get all those positions filled and no longer have those vacancy savings. And our attempts to get even the governor to agree to increasing our operating, you know, our non-personnel operating costs have gone absolutely nowhere.
Do you roughly know what the positions are, out of curiosity?
That are vacant? So, well, we have one architectural historian position, which we've got a candidate who wanted to review. We have the architecture branch chief, which Tanya is filling on an acting basis. That position is just about to be advertised. It may actually be advertised, but I don't think it has been yet. We have 2 archaeology positions on Maui, 1 on Big Island. We have an office assistant position on Big Island. We have one archaeologist on, that's right, one archaeology position on Oahu, have a burial site specialist position vacant on Maui. And then actually, is there another, there may be another office assistant on Oahu, but it's currently filled. It will be going vacant soon, I think.
And Chandra's position is assigned to assist the board, Chandra?
Yes, that's one of her duties in addition. So what does Chan do? She's my secretary, which means as much as anything, she plays this, you know, multi-dimensional chess game with my schedule. She does all of our small purchasing for the division. She is responsible for overseeing the use of our vehicles, maintenance, making sure that they're...
Sounds like your secretary.
Huh? That's
in the state system, everybody have everything that falls through the cracks.
Yeah, so she does all of that. And then she's responsible for supporting the board. So, I mean, she's got at least 3 full-time jobs, which is almost true for everybody who works in shipping. So,
is the federal component pretty set in stone? You have to worry about that being increased?
Yeah, I mean, the Historic Preservation Fund has a lot of support in Congress, and in fact, it's gone up a little bit the last 2 years. I mean, the increases are, you know, they're distributed by formula to all of the SHPO, so, you know, $1 million increase translates under that formula to about $15,000 in Hawaii. So it's gone up from, the last 2 years, it's gone up from 574 to 591 this year. You know, and nobody seems to have any interest in cutting that. In fact, I shouldn't say that. The administration regularly comes in with a budget that cuts the Historic Preservation Fund, and the House and Senate always put it back. So, yeah, we're not concerned about that. You know, any more than I'm concerned about everything else that's going on in Washington.
Are there any new proposals for the National Register that we should be aware of?
What
owner permission stuff and
I'm sorry?
Owner permission and things like that. Is that
Well, the owner consent requirement is set in the Historic Preservation Act itself. There are proposed amendments to the Park Service's rules for the National Register, which have to do with how properties on federal land get on the register, which have drawn a lot of objections, because essentially it would require the federal agency to give permission to the list. That in my view is not what the legislature or Congress envisioned when it passed the National Historic Preservation Act. There is also an owner provision, consent provision in the regulations, those revised rules, proposed revised rules, which it's not clear to me what the real impact would be. And it's also, to be perfectly honest, what the National Historic Preservation Act says is that the state is supposed to get the owner's consent. And what the Park Service did when it wrote the rules was say, no, we're going to give the owner the opportunity to object. Even when they were doing that, which was, 1981, I thought, this can't be what you mean. I don't see how you read what Congress said to come up with the language that they actually put into the act, into the regulations. But nobody's really made an issue of that, which I think is shocking, to be frank. So I think we are at least a couple years away from those regulations going final. I understand they got something on the order of 3,000 comments, which for a historic preservation rule is a lot. And they can't, it's a very formal process at the federal level, and they must respond to every comment in there, as part of adopting a final rule. They have to provide, here's a comment that came in from, Bill Chapman. And his comment is this, and this is, sometimes they'll say, yeah, we think he's out of his mind, or, yep, we agree and we've made the changes, or, yeah, we don't really think it's relevant, or we've changed a little bit, or what have you. So they have to do that for every one of those comments. And so the analysis and response before they even start revising the final to a final rule, that's going to be a very time consuming thing. So, couple other things on the budget. So, for 2 pages on, you'll see there's a increase to the collective bargaining. That's raises for staff. Divide that by 40 staff people. You can see what we're all doing. Next page, there's $150,000 for our document scanning project, and then also we've increased the ceiling on the federal funds. That's a reflection of what we anticipated in the federal grant. And then what is page 658? You can see this is a technical change. We used to have two positions in our special fund. They've changed the method of funding, so they're out of the special fund. They're now general funded positions.
I was looking at that page, and something that kind of concerns me is when I was under the special fund, it looks like the funding was $163,009. Under the regular fund, it's half of that. It's $85,000.
That reflects two things. One is, when the legislature creates a position, which it has, the way it was presented to them, that's what has happened here. When a new position is created, the legislature is aware of how Byzantine our recruitment process is, so they only fund the first year, they only fund the position for 6 months. So, next year there'll be the full funding. Fortunately, those positions are both about to go vacant. We're moving them into other general funded positions, so we're not looking at saying to somebody, well, we'll pay you for the first 6 months and then we hope you hang around. Yeah, we were, and there was also, this is one of those things, had we seen what the department was about to present to BNF, we would have caught that. We didn't see it until it came back from BNF, and once it comes back from BNF, that's what goes to the ledge.
Yeah, I was just concerned because it looks like it's cut in half.
We were less than thrilled. But, since those people are moving to different positions anyway, it's less of a concern that would have been always. And had they not been moved, we would have had to find the additional funding. We would have had to take it out of vacancy savings from other positions or taken it out of our operating funds, non-personnel. So that's sort of an overview of the budget. Two other things on the budget. There is a second budget bill, HB 116. And that was sort of, as I said, told you we have a new budget. We went through a new budget process. There were some programs that things slipped through the cracks, and so they went back in and said, we're fixing. This is a bill to fix those mistakes. And at one point, there was actually additional funding in there, not because anything slipped through the cracks, but just because people like us so much in the legislature. But during the conference committee, that funding all went away, so it doesn't affect us. In the capital budget, we have $250,000 for the design of a new building for us, for Shipley and for them. It's actually going to be on your campus. So, any questions on the budget?
Thank you very much.
I got one other thing.
Where's the new building going to be?
This is for information purposes. This has not yet been signed, but the legislature approved a historic tax credit. It is now awaiting the governor's decision. We have no reason to suspect that he will not sign it.
Is this an incentive thing?
Where? What's that?
So this is the same.
There is a federal historic preservation tax, so credit. You can get a tax credit under this bill. The state bill would allow a 30% tax credit for the substantial rehabilitation of a certified historic structure. Remember last meeting, we talked about the Dearborn Chemical Building. That's being done under the federal tax credit. That's part of the financing for that. The federal tax credit is 20%. It has to be taken over a 5-year period, so it's actually five years. So you can only claim the credit 4% per year over that 5-year period. There's no sort of timing with this. It's just 30%. The only timing question is that the building has to go into service before they can claim.
This is income on the revenue of the building, right?
Well, no. I'm not sure I'm going to answer the question.
Let's say for the
so federal. It's the credit is based on the cost of the rehabilitation, so it has nothing to do with the income. But if you have not been there, if you go to 75 North King Street, which is where the Senia restaurant is, that was done with the federal tax credit. And the owner tells me, listen, before we bought this building, there were 3 people employed working in that building. In addition to all of the taxes that were paid on you know, the material, the labor, the specialty, the consultants, the engineers, the architects, the planners, all that. In addition to those taxes, there are now 30 people working in that building. It's pretty nice, let me tell you. They're also doing the same thing that they're doing a similar project on the Podmore building. It is capped at $1 million aggregate credit per year for the first 5 years, and then right now it is set to sunset after 5 years. So at 30%, that $1 million means roughly $3.3 million in qualified expenses. Sort of for historic background, 2 years we could not even get a hearing on a bill to study a tax credit. And this went, basically went from zero to 60 in 60 days.
What moved it?
I think it moved because it was assigned to different committees. So on the, this was, as originally drafted, there were going to be two credit levels. There was going to be a 25% credit across the board, and then 30% if projects involved affordable housing. So the bill on the House side was assigned to the Housing Committee. So Tom Brower, who was chair of the Housing Committee, in addition to being very interested in housing, that's why he's on, he's chairing that committee, but he also is a supporter of historic preservation. And as it went through the process, so there was a House bill that Brower introduced. There was a Senate bill that was introduced by Sharon Milwaukee. They were not identical because they both started with the same draft, but they handed it off to different attorneys who, ended up drafting different bills that got submitted. So as I went through the process, they sort of moved together. And when, the Senate bill, the bill that ultimately passed, made crossover to the House, it went back to the House Housing Committee, and in the course of their hearing, they eliminated the 25% level and made it 30% across the board. I mean, it was a very interesting discussion to watch, because one of the vice chair of the committee kept asking, he said, well, is 30%, is that 5% increase for affordable housing, is that enough of an incentive? I said, well, I don't know the answer to that. And because he asked the same questions on the House version, I had asked my friends who do those kinds of projects what they thought, and they all kind of went, "Yeah, I don't know." So I, had to repeatedly tell them, I can't answer that question. But anyway, so he rose to his questions. They recessed for decision making, and the two of them got together and decided they would just make it 30% across the board. And how that, the logic of that discussion escapes me altogether. But we do have a bill. I have to be honest and say I'd be shocked if the governor doesn't sign. We've got no feedback from the governor suggesting that he won't. The only question that was ever asked that suggested, and this didn't come, this came from Sylvia Luke, was how much is this going to cost? Well, it's capped at $1 million. The $15 billion budget, $1 billion, and it will produce revenue. That's the only possible thing that could be a question for the governor, and I just don't see that being an issue. So I'm thrilled, to be honest. It's not 100% of what I asked for, but I'm actually kind of surprised that we got this far in 1 year.
Is it better than the cities, Bill?
Well, yes, I think so. I think it's better because it actually encourages preservation. Whereas somebody wants to get their building listed, their private residence listed, if they go through that process, they can get a tax, they can get a reduction on their property taxes. But this is actually something, take the 75 North King, the Podmore building as examples. those buildings were in deteriorated condition. And so here's a reason to take a building that's in deteriorated condition and rehabilitate it and put it back into use. So I think because it's a proactive preservation thing, I think it's a better one. And it's also a tax credit. So for those of you who don't know the difference, you know, what you get is a reduction in your real estate taxes, and that's, you know, it's not a bad thing. The tax credit is an actual reduction on what you owe the government. So if you owe $1 million to the government and you have a $100,000 tax credit, you only have to pay $900,000 in tax. You know, if you have $1 million income and have a $100,000 deduction, it reduces your taxable income to $900,000. You still got to pay, you know, you still got to pay the full taxes on that. A tax credit is a much bigger deal than the tax deduction. So yeah, I think it's much better than the counties.
Very good.
I mean, I don't think the counties is trivial. Don't get me wrong. But they're fundamentally different. In many ways, they're fundamentally different. But I think this is a more proactive thing.
How many properties do we anticipate would take advantage of this in a year, I guess?
Senia cost $2.1 million. Podmore's going to cost over $3 million. Basically, it's so expensive to build in Hawaii that it will only take a couple projects to hit the cap.
How many ITC projects do you have at the federal level?
Right now, we have the only one that's actually, we've got four going on right now. And there's nothing to prevent somebody from applying for both.
Do you have to apply for this before you start the project?
There are a number of things that are not specified in the Act that will have to be worked out in the rules. There are a number of things that honestly I haven't thought about because it hasn't been signed by the governor and I don't want to invest. Because rewriting is really a time sink. And so I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about what comes next until the governor actually puts pen to paper.
What's the thing?
Even saying I'm optimistic, and then I'll just tell Tony to take care of it.
What's the thinking regarding what an eligible property is? Is it a historic property, a significant historic property,
okay,
or
so
a property that's on the register?
The statute says, you know, it envisions a very similar process to the federal tax credit. So, you know, the first step is it eligible for the Hawaii or National Register or a contributing structure to a listed historic district? And you know, if it's not in a historic district and it isn't listed yet, it can start the first step by us looking at it and saying, yes, we agree it's eligible, so you can move to the next step. It will have to be listed before it goes into service. And it could be, you know, I mean, there are, certainly we've never seen it. There's nothing that would say, you know, something has to be on the Hawaii Register as well as the National Register. So somebody could come to you folks and say, we don't care about the Hawaii Register, we want the National Register. You know, that's never happened, but there's nothing that would prevent that. So it could be either Hawaii or National Register.
I can just say I know some property owners in Hilo who we've been trying to encourage to apply for the register, and they've been reluctant to. They don't see enough benefit from it. But if this passes, that might be the incentive for them to get the buildings listed so they can get the tax credit to get it rehabilitated. So this, I could see this making a difference at East and Hilo in trying to get some of our downtown properties restored and registered. Because I've been talking to some of the property owners and they just don't see enough benefit from it. And so this could be a key piece.
Yeah, and I mean, we certainly agree. You know, we think this is going to provide people with incentives. I have had discussions with some property owners in Kelowna Town, which is, you know, a lot of that is, you know, sort of its historic plantation area, commercial district. There are other places as well throughout the state. So I think one of the, you know, One of the reasons I think we've only got four HTC, federal HTC projects in Hawaii is that Shifty has historically not done much to market it as a program. You know, when I came here, there were 5 years ago, they didn't know. So now if all four of these go through, we will have had 7 since I got here. I think it's a good thing. And in terms of, as I said, there's a cap right now, an annual cap of $1 million, which means they're not going to take a lot of projects. But I think if the legislature, number one, can see that there's a real interest in this, that we can go back for amendment. At the same time, we'll also be in a position to give them hard numbers. Right now, I can say, look, here's what we think this means in terms of the cost. So, there's $1 million tax credit, but then $1 million in expenses on a rehabilitation project on average is going to generate X dollars in GET, and X dollars in income tax and things like that. We can say, look, what we know based on the Podmore building and 75 North King Street is that it takes about a year and a half to 2 years before all of that tax credit is paid back in new taxes. And then that, those buildings will be in service for another 20 years at least. So it's a net win for the state. But right now, I can only talk about that in theoretical terms. When we've got a bunch of these projects, we'll be able to go back to WAM and Finn and say, look, it's going to cost this because you raised the cap to this amount. You know what the maximum cost is. And if you hit that maximum, this is what you get in increased revenue.
Okay, are there any other questions?
Yeah, ma'am. I have a larger one. With the Historic Honeycutt Town project, we have over 5 properties that have been passed by you folks on the board, and they are apparently sitting at Shifty, and one has been a year, and the Gilbert Wong, it's the Wong Brothers store, he's way up in his 90s now, and really to give the satisfaction of being able to say that it had gone on to the National Register would be really wonderful. And the Kotaki property, the last survivor is in her 80s, and it went all the way up to the National, and they wanted us to add the residences behind. We did that, we turned it in. That should have gone directly up to the National without any question. I'm really asking, I'm imploring you to sign those, all 5 of those, and there's other people too, the Hakalau, Jodo, and other ones, that just could be signed. The National will say, up at that level, they'll say, you need to add this or not this, or this is fine. And they do it in a very swift order. This is the only section of all of your statutes and rules that say not 30 days, not 45 days, not 60 days. There's no limitation here. And to have something sit for a year is just really sad. The other thing is, what do the National people think? They think that Hawaii isn't doing anything in preservation because the National Register is that outpouring of things that are being done in the preservation world in Hawaii. And it's for cultural tourism is the other big thing too. So there's all the good things that come from it, and I'm really asking you to sign those pages and they're ready. All the packages have NPS written on them and they're ready to go. It just requires the signatures, really. We've had four, each one of ours have had 4 reviews. We have the local Cultural Resource Commission, we have Shifty, we have you people, and if there should be anything else that needs to be fixed, it was fixed, very small. I mean, that's quite a number of people that have gone through and investigated and reviewed it, and it really should, none of them should really take any more time. I mean, there's things when people come to the meetings and they may be incomplete, that's a different thing, but these are all complete and we'd really, really like to have you sign them.
We'll review and get them. I will tell you this. I mean, it is not, the SHPO's signature on those forms is not a rubber stamp. I mean, we actually do a substantive review. If there was no reason for us to do, the only reason for that to be certified by the SHPO is because we're supposed to do a substantive review. So, and we do that. And bear in mind, We have literally thousands of other things that we do in that office. So it's, this is not the only thing that, Tanya and Julia do.
Well, we're asking you to trust us that they are complete.
Well,
and that they have gone through SHFTI twice, let alone local and let alone our representative board.
So there, I mean, we can have, if the chair is willing, I will go on and we can have a discussion about this, or we can talk afterwards. But I disagree with you, Mr. Weberstein.
May I, as the chair, may I suggest that you two talk it out and then figure it out? If it is brought up next time in the next week, we'll discuss it. But right now, I think maybe you ought to talk it amongst yourself and then see. I think it's something that maybe you, it sounds reasonable to work it out. So may I just humbly suggest that? Okay. Anything else you want to report on?
That's it.
Any questions from the members of the board? Thank you very much, Alan. All right, the next meeting for the board is July 26th. The day before that is the pre-site visit, so to speak. And then the other is August 30th, and then the final one is November 22nd. Please remember that you submit your resume. And then here we are with two more nominations, the Leo residence and the Lowry residence.
Can we call for adjournment?
Before we
need a motion.
If you want a limited meeting, you have to pass a resolution calling for a limited meeting for these two properties.
Okay, so then we should set that up for July already.
I move we have a limited meeting on July 25th for the meeting of the 26th.
Okay. Is there a second?
Because there are four criteria. Well, because it's impractical, it's unsafe, there are privacy concerns.
All of the above.
Okay.
Seconded.
So, sorry, who's the motion? Is that Bill?
Bill, yeah. This is for the pre-site, right?
Right.
Pre-meeting.
This is the meeting. And Matt?
Okay. Seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now the next one, the meeting date, the 30th, that we already set, is that correct?
I'm sorry, August the 30th? Yes, those are the meeting dates that you approved at the last meeting.
Okay, so the 26th, we don't need to do anything, we just did the 25th, which is the pre-visit. Right.
Okay. This is, aside from the limited meeting, this is just...
finished.
Yeah, this is just for note, just for a reminder.
Okay. So that's power with that section. Okay, let's see. Anything else before I go and start thinking about adjourning this meeting? Anybody? Nope. Would someone move for adjournment?
Move to adjourn.
I'll do me.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.